Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for ranks, flanks, and kings of war. Join your hosts as they delve into the world of Panathar and bring you worldwide coverage of all things Kings of War.
All right, everyone, welcome to Countercharge Podcast. This is Steve with Baron of Dice.
I'm Rob Enough.
And I am Jeremy Duvall. We're really excited to have Steve, the Baron himself. As many of people have seen, there are fancy new custom Kings of War dice. And I know Steve, Rob, and I are big fans of Baron of Dice. So you look in either of our dice bags and you'll find things that look familiar, especially Rob, when it comes to square dice.
I'm tired of regular dice. Give me some square dice. What has a salamander symbol? You guys have some fire drink dice. So I was like, all right, that's good. And they rolled well. My opponents don't thank you, but I thank you.
Yeah, the Drake dice are nice. I do like those.
It's just something about square dice. And I just think it's interesting, you know, and we're going to hear Steve's background, a little bit of his gamer origin story. But one of the first things I remember in walking into a game store was the see-through gem polyhedral dice for old school D&D. And it's something as a gamer, we just love dice. Like, what do you think? Why do we love dice so much?
It's almost back to that Pokemon, gotta collect them all. And it's there. It's just dangling. It's just this little, you'll never collect all the dice. But you could try, right? I think it's almost, hey, these are pretty. Let's collect them. And then you start surrounding yourself and seeing other designs and variations. And you're like, oh yeah, I could add these.
And it's like, Rob, it's like every new army needs a new set of dice.
100%. I think I saw you guys for the first time a year ago at Adepticon. I'm like, what is this? Come in fancy tins, got very nice logos.
Yeah.
It's a step above.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. I'm one of those things where it's like, I can't show people until they've really gotten to know me how many dice I own. Because I don't want to be judged, but it's just like one of those things that it's like, you're right. It's one as a gamer, you can't ever have enough dice when it comes to dice. So I know we're really excited to have you on to talk about your awesome company. But before we get into that, whenever we have someone new on the Countercharge airwaves, we always like to hear a little bit about their gamer origin story. So I was hoping you could riff on that a little bit, how you sort of got involved maybe in tabletop gaming, or how did gaming and sort of dice get in your radar growing up?
Yeah, of course. So I started gaming in high school, and I was always enthralled with the local kind of games workshop store. And that was on the Avenue, kind of our little hip area next to the movie theater growing up. So I would always stop in. And what caught my eye was fantasy, right? Fantasy wargaming, in particular, Lord of the Rings. So very first set I ever bought, very first set I ever painted, was a Lord of the Rings set, and it was Gondor versus some goblins and the nice troll. And that kind of had me hooked. So from there, I'm pretty crafty. So I crafted a board, you know, in high school with styrofoam. And I remember cutting colored pencils in half, and I made a bridge with them. And it was kind of fun. And then that led to kind of where I am now, which is still fantasy focused and gaming with my local friends and local groups and high school friends, right? We kind of all stayed in touch, and we're still rocking and rolling, trying new game systems. And it's kind of fun now because there aren't three games to choose from. There are dozens. There are probably hundreds. And some of these new ones, they're really neat. They really take it, you know, they give you something that you've never had before. So that's kind of where I am now as a gamer is, hey, let's see what else is out there while still, you know, paying homage to where I came from, where those fantasy games that I still play.
Yeah, we've talked about on the show before, there used to be like in the 90s and early 2000s, you had Warhammer, but then choice number two or three was way down.
Right.
Way down as far as like quality or cleanliness of rules or quality of models. And now I feel the parity and the space in between is much thinner. So now you have a lot of games that are all super professional, well done, well designed games.
I agree. I mean, 100%. You can kind of see it in the rules and even the lore. I mean, look at the new game systems have lore, and the lore is deep. It's not, you know, a paragraph, here's your army. It's here's a book almost. Here's a short novel. Check it out if you want. Of course I do. I love novel. I love lore. So
what's on your hobby table right now? What are you working on?
I kind of, I do the, I guess the quick route is I pay commission painters. So that's kind of where they are. But I can tell you what they are working on.
Okay, what are your minions working on?
Of course, of course.
Every baron needs a minions, right? You need your vassals. What are your vassals working on?
The peasants. They are working on Guild Ball. So I definitely want to kind of do a little dive into Guild Ball. It sort of started with the new, well, I guess it's old now, the 10th of 40K. I've never played 40K. Like, I've never had my own 40K army. It's always been fantasy. So I wanted to start a Death Watch army. However, me being different, I kind of wanted to do a reverse paint scheme. So paint the Marine in his chapter, and then his one arm is silver. Versus normal, it's all silver, one arm home chapter. Just to kind of add some flair. I need color. And just a black and silver model wasn't doing it for me.
That's cool.
In terms of fantasy, I think I have myself covered. I've got Maggotkin and Nurgle. I've got Deepkin. I've got, you know, Flesh Eater Courts, Slaves to Darkness, and OBR. And those are kind of my flip-flop between them all.
You're mostly playing AOS, or are you dabbling into the old world yet?
Mostly AOS so far. That's a great question, because my roots, of course, were with old world, right? From Lord of the Rings, I went to Tomb Kings, and that Tomb Scorpion model, gah, fire.
Even though it was metal, it was still awesome.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Putting it together was a chore.
Right. But man, did it look cool. So I've thought about it. I'm just like, I probably will. I'll be honest. Do I want to stick with the skeletons, or do I want to hit a dwarf, or do I want to hit Bretonnia? Do I want to fight for the good guys, or do I want to stay in, you know, my chaos death realm?
Is that usually where your inclinations have always gone?
That's usually where I go.
The bad guys?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And like you said, it's a fun time. I think it's really the golden age of miniature gaming right now. And that whatever as Rob, you say, you know, there's a game for everyone and everyone for a game. And that no matter what your flavor is, whether it's sci-fi or fantasy or superheroes, I think you have a legitimate choice in that genre to play.
In terms of Guild Ball, Steamforged Games doesn't make it anymore, right? So did like the community pick that up?
Yeah, they kind of reneged it. They said, hey, we're going to come back if you guys will have us. And I think the community kind of overall was like, heck yeah, we kind of missed you. Welcome back to the party that we've been keeping up. And I'm excited for it. I can't wait to see some of the new models, the new sculpts, and some of the new rules rights. I think it's going to be pretty cool.
Now, I know you were a Blood Bowl guy. Rob, did you ever do Guild Ball?
No, that was a little later for me. I was kind of out of skirmish games at that point, or like the small format stuff. I mean, the Steamforged guys make great models, man. They've always, and those Guild Ball models are some of the coolest models around. And the fact that you only have to paint, you know, what, 8 or 9 or 10, you know, whatever it is, a small amount, really have your minions go to town on them, because, you know, there's less of them.
It's only a few you got to paint, right? Years as a gamer, you know, you love the hobby. What was like the genesis or the inspiration, or what was like, that seems such a thing to be like, oh, I'm going to make my own dice company. I mean, how does something like that even sort of enter into your psyche?
Definitely by accident. So I was playing, rolling, and I just got this freshly painted army back, and I just wanted basically everything I could to complement it, right? To be kind of accent it and bring me more into the gameplay. So I made a dice bag, right? Or I didn't make it. I found a dice bag and bought it. We had marker sticks and kind of tokens made up. And then I couldn't find dice. I couldn't find any dice. The only dice, this was OBR that I'm referring to. So skeletons again. There's a resounding theme here. and the only dice that I could find that were, I guess, official, quote unquote, were skeleton bones as the pips. And I was like, this is just not readable to me. I don't know. It didn't feel right. Plus, I painted mine in kind of a burning ember, charred bone type level. I just couldn't find anything matched it. So what I did was you kind of just create them. You just YouTube, right? Like every sane person does, is YouTube it, figure out how to do it, try it. And I tried it, and it kind of worked. So from there, it's just kind of expanded into, I no longer make them myself, right? We have a little factory kind of set up, and they're still using the techniques that I learned, right? They're still doing resin dice versus acrylic dice. And that alone, of course, we can do a little dive into later, but that sets them apart. Square corner versus round corner. Why choose? Why not offer both? I wanted that for myself, and it turns out other players also wanted that. And that's kind of where we are today, is I'm only here because other people want it and I listen. So if they say, hey, I'd love to see this, chances are I'm going to do it, right? I'm going to match. I'm going to at least have that as an option.
Yeah, I know. Buying all the widgets are the fan. We love the bling. We call it the bling, right? Yeah. You want the markers that match your army, or the dice that match your army, or the tokens, or it's part of the experience of feeling connected to this thing that you've spent how many hours playing with or painting or whatever. You feel, I think, a connection to your miniatures. And maybe there's something in that dice that it's you're always touching and rolling.
Dice are the ultimate bling, right? Because you touch them all the time. You know, if you have wound counters or something else, or like a measuring stick, okay, yeah, you use it occasionally. You use dice all of the time. People see it. You're throwing them out there on the table for everybody right to enjoy. So
when you started the Baron, did you sort of start with sort of one genre? Did you have a game plan? Because when you look at your site, or anyone know, you have stuff for everything, right? Talk a little bit about like how you first picked your first few lines, or what was your thinking when you guys were just getting started?
The very first one was my skeletons, right? I needed to do my skeletons. So what I did was I had 100 made. I only needed 50. So then I went on Facebook and they sold in a week. And I was like, holy crap. Okay. I didn't expect that. So then it turns out I made the other 50 for free. And it was like, this is great. So I just covered my hobby. And then Philippe, who was my best friend, we've been gaming since high school. He was playing Ghost Army. So the next step up was Ghost Dice. And I went a little higher, right? And we made a lot more. We made 500. And they kind of sold on Facebook in about a month, but they still sold on Facebook. And I'm wrapping them in Saran wrap, right? And kind of shipping them out of my kitchen. And that's kind of the glory days. That's kind of how it all started. And then from there, I was like, I might be onto something. Created a Facebook page and joined a bunch of Facebook groups and just asked and said, hey, like, who would like to see what, right? I'm going to dabble in this. I'm going to dive into this. And there was resounding feedback. It was amazing. Like, that's kind of how I attribute it pretty much all to feedback from players who steered me in the right direction of, hey, I would love to see these, or hey, I'd love to see these. So then it went from two designs, if you want to call it that, or two first batches, to 29 designs, right? That was my huge push. And that did very well. And from there, I'm still operating on Facebook. I'm still wrapping them in Saran wrap. I'm still, you know, buying the whatever they are, priority mailer, bubble wrap, bubble mailers from USPS and shipping out of there. And then from there, it's just been like batches of 10. Just kind of, I'm going to add 10. This month, I'm going to add 10. This month, I'm going to add 10. And then it was too much at that point. And that's when we had to start sourcing and creating our own production line, right? Our own production factory. And that's kind of where we are now is, hey, we've trained people. We've set up our factory that knows what they're doing and they're using material and products that I want, right? I get to pick the brand. I get to choose the technique on how we swirl because there's different ways to swirl resin. And it's just really cool.
But where is that happening now? Like geographically?
Our factory?
Yeah.
Is in Hong Kong.
Okay, cool.
It's over in Asia. Yeah. Yeah. It's been a minute to get to there. We've kind of jumped all over, but that's where we are now. That's where we've landed. It kind of allows full control, to be honest, because it's a FaceTime call every night, right? I'm talking with our production lead and, hey, how's it looking? Like, how are these custom orders coming along? Like, let's see how they're doing it. What do you think about this technique for this design, right? I don't know if you've seen our kind of dappled swirl spotted, but this was a whole very big learning curve, but I think we nailed it. So little things like that, I think it just gives us a leg up on, hey, you have this level of control versus kind of acrylic dice where it's just mass produced.
In looking at your website and your all your marketing materials, everything, I would say, very attention to detail, just from an outside perspective. Like everything looks super slick, like your pat, everything. So is that what you say, like that must have been important to you, right? When moving the production out of your own space to make sure that you still had that agency over the quality and detail of the product?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Up until this February, I was hand packing every order. So that's when we brought on Tim, who is our new kind of logistics lead who helps pack all the orders. But up until that point, I was touching every order that went out. And it was super cool. It was, I got to leave notes for people who said, hey, happy birthday. Well, that doesn't translate, right? I have to write that. So I was writing these little notes and it was cool. It was really cool. Just kind of watching this grow from me saran wrapping things, actually hiring someone. It's been really cool.
Yeah, because you have, you know, growing that own business is all, we could have a whole show just on that by itself, right? Right. What it's like to grow and build a small business, grow and build a small business within a niche of a, which is in a gaming hobby, yes. You know, all these different like layers. What I'm curious about, this idea of really listening to your audience, right? Being like, hey, I would love to have dice that go with my Space Marines, or I would love to have dice that go with my Imperial Fists, or I would love to go have dice. So, but yet they're asking you for things that are part of IPs that are closely protected, right, by their companies. So in looking at your dice, it's like, you seem to be able to walk this really interesting line of, when I look at your Ultra dice, or the Upsilon dice, or the dice that are blue and gold with the U, I'm like, okay, those are going to go great with my Ultramarines. Right. But Ultramarines is the IP that belongs to GW. So could you maybe talk a little bit about how do you kind of walk that line between respecting IP, but also creating stuff that people like, I want the Fleur-de-Lis dice for my Sisters of Battle. You know what I mean? Or,
you named two of the easiest ones that have ever existed, because a Fleur-de-Lis is uncopyrightable, right?
Right.
The Omega symbol. Right. Also, it's just uncopyrightable. So what we've done now is to kind of face and meet any kind of or any type or any preparing legal challenges is bring on artists, professional artists, and they are tasked with creating original symbols. So they research, right, which is great. They design and hand sketch designs. They give us about 10 per. If I say I would love... Right, a dwarf. Give me a dwarf with a beard, chunky. When you think dwarf, you think square. You think no curves. I kind of want him angular. Maybe he's royalty. Maybe throw some jewelry in his beard just to denote the rank. And he'll take that and he will create, you know, a little grouping of 10 symbols. And then what we'll do is take those 10 symbols to our lawyer and then he'll copyright them. So then now we have this stream of copyrighted designs that, you know, hopefully if it ever does arise, any type of legal challenge, we'll have something to stand on. Just trying to get ahead of the game, per se. I think that's kind of the fine line. But you're right, it is a fine line. And luckily, we also have history on our side, right? So many game systems, many, 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 almost every game system pulls on history. And as long as we can pull roots from history, chances are we can make any type of symbol. I hope that made sense.
It does. If you look at your website, you guys have so many flipping types of dice. Yeah. Obviously, some of these are licensed.
Yes.
You know, when you have your own symbols and it's right in your control, that's probably maybe easier.
Easier.
Where you have the licensed one where you have to give them samples and they have to approve it. So just talk to us about licensed dice.
Yeah, absolutely. So licensed dice are a total animal. The first task is acquiring that license. And reaching out and saying, hey, you know, I'm over here. I'm a little guy. Would you care to have licensed dice? Can I take that chance? Are you willing to take that risk? Because it's a bit of a risk for them to license out anything. Several companies have said yes, and that's super exciting, right? So Mantic being, right, Countercharge Podcast, so let's leave with them. Mantic has been great to work with, like absolutely hyper-responsive.
Yeah, Steve, I got to know, did Ronnie Renton just walk by your booth and ask you why you didn't have Kings of War dice? Because that sounds like a Ronnie Renton kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I approached him. I was like, hey, Halo next? Wink, wink. No, so that's kind of, it's fun because they provide you the symbols and they provide you the lore and the backdrop. And they kind of, you read into that and you're thinking, okay, Twilight Kin, what can I do for Twilight Kin? I kind of want that dark, dreary. I want to go into that lore and I want that to pop on the dice. And working with the creators of that lore, nothing beats it. I mean, that's, talk about player feedback. I mean, that was player number one, right? Patient zero.
Yeah, that's really interesting to think about narrative driving color choices, right? That where it's not just, oh, I haven't done a red dice in a while. It's you want to, that's something that's going through your mind when you're in the creation process is what is the flavor, or what is the ambiance of this faction? What is it invoking in me design wise?
Absolutely. That is my leading, I guess, choice or driver of colors is, okay, where are they in lore, right? Are they good? Are they bad? Do they wear white armor? Are they wearing blue armor? Do they have accents? And then I take my knowledge of resin making and then I say, ooh, you know what? Yellow is very hard to swirl. Yellow is tricky, right? Yellow is tricky all around. Let's be honest. Yellow is one of the worst. But if you put a yellow and a blue, it's going to make a green. It's not like acrylic dice where you can swirl blue and yellow and they won't mix. Resin, they're going to mix. They're going to go like this. And so then you're like, okay, let's do either a yellow dice, perhaps with some white, and then you could do a dark blue inlay. And that works really well. Or you could do the reverse of that and just put maybe a blue and a black, or a blue and a white, or three blues together and then have a yellow inlay.
I'm curious, you know, seeing your dice from all these different game systems, and on your website too, you guys have really nice pictures of models from all sorts of different game systems. And I think being able to soup up your army is part of the joy of the hobby. So I imagine someone getting into, let's say, MCP or whatever, and they're like, oh, I want to get this faction, but I don't know. I don't really want to use their dice. Ooh, I can get these special X-Men dice or blue and gold dice. I'm going to get it. And then it's almost like the dice can help you pick an army. I've done that before where I see an awesome set of dice and I'm like, ooh, what faction would go well with this? I mean, do you think these companies that maybe that you produce stuff for that you don't have, let's say, an exact license with, do you get a sense from them that they're pro what you're doing, in that whatever gets more people playing, you know, whatever gets more people into the hobby is a good thing for them?
I certainly hope that's how they feel.
And let's talk about the coolest thing, though. You got these tins, you know, Chessick's got the plastic container, right?
Right.
Some people have tubes. I've seen dice that are in like a little test tube thing.
Right.
I'm assuming you're positioning this as a premium product, and the packaging, which I'm a fan of as a packaging engineer, I'm a fan of premium packaging. And so, yeah, you've got this fully printed metal tin with a foam insert, right? And it's, talk to us about how you got to that point. Cause you know, you were talking about before where you're packaging things up yourself and saran wrap. You're not doing that anymore. These are pretty sweet. So how do you get to that point?
Yeah. So that was huge, right? So we went from saran wrap to clear kind of plastic packaging. And I still do this for like Etsy, eBay, other sales channels. They kind of get the plastic packaging. Stores, right? Stores, it helps because of a hang tab. But other websites, it's because they take a percentage of sales. And I would love to kind of keep the website as premium. Hey, you don't just get dice, right? You get dice, they come in a throwaway package. No, no, no. You get a metal tin, right? You can carry these. You can quickly see, hey, oh, this is for my Twilight Kin army. This is for my Orc army. This is for X, Y, and Z army, right? And I think that added, it was a huge step for me. It was very scary, kind of bringing on just a whole different person I've never worked with and kind of commissioning to have those metal tins made. And it worked, I think.
Yeah, 100% it worked. They're amazing. Especially when you go to your booth at Adepticon and you just have,
it's a lot,
you know, 10,000 tins of every possible color or symbol. It's overwhelming. And, you know, to your point, it adds some value to it because, you know, a lot of people are like, well, what am I going to put my dice? I'm going to put them in a dice bag, or am I going to put them in? Right. You can put them back in this tin and, you know, show them off. That's what they're there for.
Pop them in, pop them out. And if you have a dice bag, pop them out and use the tin for something else. Put your tokens in there, put your markers in there. You could find some use for it.
The question that everybody wants to know is, square or rounded? What's best in life?
Yeah, this is the great debate. I think it's going to stay around.
The eternal question.
Yes. Yeah. So I am team square corner. I can say that kind of proudly. I wear my square corners proudly. I used to be round corner, right? I think it was pretty much, hey, everyone is going to play with round corner. And they're great, right? They roll around a little bit. They do their spinny things. And they're fantastic when you get a hold of a square corner dice. It's almost like you're rolling with a purpose. It's almost like you're going to take this cube, right? And you're going to throw it hard enough to randomize the spin. And it just feels, I don't know, it feels like I'm actually rolling for a purpose, right? It feels like I'm going to charge this dude into this dude. And here are the two dice that are going to allow it to happen. And you kind of toss them, you know, a good half to them. And when they land, they land. They just land flat, right? There's no, oh, where's it going to land? No, it's flat. But it is a great debate, and I think it's going to stay because it comes down to a personal preference, right? There's no right or wrong to this.
Well, yeah, there is. Square look cooler.
Judge away, my friend. We judge.
Yeah, we will judge all day. Yeah.
Something so pure about the feel of that square edge.
Right.
In terms of Kings of War, though, I know you did one round of faction dice. I'm assuming you got some more coming down the pipe.
Yeah, I'd like to do another kind of another batch, right? I have a meeting with Mantic at the end of the month, so I'm excited for that. I've been listening, and Rift Forged Orcs seem mm-hmm. to be the most chanted. So I would like to, of course, push for those to come next.
Salamanders would be good too.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I'm not biased or anything.
Oh, I've heard it. I've got it's already on my list. I've got it. So we're kind of review a list and probably add, my goal is about 3 designs, and then sort of just keep it going. Let's do 3 designs every 3 months and kind of see if we can or can't hit anything.
How did Kings of War get on your radar? Like before, like, can you take us a little bit on how did that early process work with getting that license and how you started that?
Of course. So I have quite a few emails a day, and some of those emails are, hey, I really like this dice. Can you make them? And I'm like, all right, well, we can try, right? So the very first step is reaching out. So I reached out to Mantic, and I got a hold of someone, and we went back and forth and kind of talked and discussed. And then after 2-ish months of talking, we decided, okay, I'm going to make some samples for you. And then I made some samples, sent it over to them. I guess they liked them. And they were like, here's our agreement. Here's our royalties and licensing agreement. And let's do this thing. And I was like, heck yeah. And then we just kind of started from there. So we dove right into it, right? We hit, I guess there's 12 of them. Yeah, 12 of them that we started with. And then I did a round and square corner of each. 24 designs that we kind of made. And I'm excited.
They're super cool. I mean, what's the reception been?
So far, so good. Like, really good. I had a lot of people just kind of emailing me saying, hey, got the dice, love this. And then they kind of sent a little picture of their army with it. Like, hey, these are going to match so great. A few of those. And that's been really cool to see because they're in a whole different game system, right? We've never kind of touched those players before. We've never interacted with the Kings of War community until now.
Funny, though, looking at your website, you know, the two of the easier companies to work with, Mantic and Corvus Belli, like, uh-huh. You know, if you talk to Wing Tassar, the publishing arm that makes the books, they work with those companies. Obviously, you work with both those companies. So there must be something in the Mantic and the Corvus Belli, and there's probably other people. You know, they're just easier to deal with, and they just want you to make cool products that enhance what they're already doing, give something back to the players. So it's nice when things are easy, as opposed to, you know, if God forbid you ever had to deal with Disney or some of the other big juggernauts, they'd be like, ah.
Right. I think they're still players at heart. And I think that kind of resonates with their business model is they're just in it, right? They're in it for the game, for the hobby, and they just want to see it do well. They want to see their game system expand and get some love and have new things, new toys.
Yeah. And I think that's true, right? As those companies that maybe aren't quite as big or aren't publicly traded or whatever, they have a, their player base is their audience. It's not their player base plus shareholders plus this and that plus this, you know, all those crazy things. Rob and I go to Adepticon every year, and we love seeing your booth. I'm just curious with Adepticon in general. Every time I've been at your booth at Adepticon, it is like Night of the Living Dead. I got to come back later, bro.
I'm like, I'll come back in an hour, maybe when the line's down a little bit.
We are always big proponents of getting our listeners and just people going to Adepticon. It's a really a special experience. How many years have you been going, or is how busy your booth was this year? Is that been growing over time? Or
so we're only 3 years old as of the end of this month. So it'll kind of be our anniversary coming up. And I guess wherever we go, there is always kind of a line or activity at our booth. And that, again, is a really good sign. It's just a really good sign. And half of those players might just be hanging out and talking to us. and, you know, hey, like, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And I love that. I think that if I ever stop doing that, something's wrong, right? If I ever stop listening or being approachable, right? I want to remain that way for as long as forever, right? As long as we're in business.
Yeah. I mean, it's just always such a good vibe at your booth whenever I've been there. What do you think of the change of venue happening next year? What's your thoughts? Because I felt this last year, Rob and I both felt like this is way too many people. Like, just moving around was like just tough. What do you think about moving to a bigger space as a vendor?
Yeah, I'm always excited for new things, right? New challenges, new opportunities, as I like to look at them. I'm the eternal optimist always. So we've done research, right? We've Googled it. We've checked out sort of the building as much as we can. And it is huge. It is going to be epic. It is going to be super cool. So Adepticon's always like the flagship, right? It's the biggest event that we attend anyway. And I'm excited. I've never been to Milwaukee, so that's cool. I can kind of check that off the list. And it's all being renovated. It's like 2 million square feet or something insane. I don't see how it could. It's all up and up.
You mentioned other events. What other events do you guys attend?
Sure. So we went to LVO for the first time this year. And that was my first time in Vegas. And yeah, Vegas is wild. The casinos are very good at taking your money.
And there's somebody that's making dice.
Yeah.
Going to Las Vegas has got to be a nice, warm feeling.
Oh, yeah. I went right to the craps table. I was like, I got this. I was like, this is money in the bank. No, it was money in their bank. LVO, Nova. Nova's a really good. I like Nova a lot, partially because it's right in my neighborhood. It's an hour away. But the guys there running it and everything are very cool. Of course, the Adepticon and FLG people are equally as cool. It's just they're my neighbors, so it's a different feeling. ACO, we're going to this year. We went to Richmond Open. That was fun. We always go to Everwinter in Massachusetts, and we typically go to Summer Slaughter, and that's in Pennsylvania. And those are kind of the smaller ones, but they're local-ish to us, you know, within 2 or 3 hours. That's all I got.
What's amazing is this year, U.S. Masters is going to be held at the Nova. So, you know, there'll be 150 Kings of War players.
Right.
At Nova this year. So we're excited. We've never had the U.S. Masters at like a big marquee event. So it'll be nice to see if we get some. Hopefully we're getting some more extra eyeballs on the game.
Okay. That'll be exciting.
Yeah. And for Masters, there's 8 regions of the country divided, and each region sends a team of 8, but we also run alongside minor masters. We call it the best of the rest, which is for everyone who wants to. It's like the NIT, the not invited tournament, but we hold both events together. It's sort of like a Masters weekend. And like I say, Masters 68 players and the best of the rest is 40 to 60. So you'll have over 100 Kings players there that weekend. So definitely bring your Kings of War dice, because you'll have a ready audience for them.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. I'll get a lot of feedback. Hey, maybe I'll even have those Riftforge orcs by then.
That'd be amazing. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned a little bit you guys do custom dice for people. Take us a little bit through what's that process like?
Sure. So that's kind of one of our many asked questions is, hey, I love your dice, but they're not quite what I'm looking for. So we like to offer a custom dice option. So that is quite literally any combination that you can dream up, right? There's no catalog. There's no limitations. There are color wheels of any color that you can choose, and that's what you choose. If you want round corner or square corner, you tell me. If you want mini dice or 16 millimeter dice, you tell me. If you want matte finish, translucent, pearlescent, you tell me. Right. And it's all on our website. It's a tool that you could kind of pick these colors, upload your symbol. If you want your symbol on the one side or the 6 side, I'll tell you you're wrong if you choose the one side, but I'll still do it. And then you can do it. Right. It's so custom. Hundreds of thousands of combinations, and it's all to whatever you would like. And I think that is really cool. That was another big kind of leap for us, is making it easily accessible to anyone to choose and pick and create anything they want.
It's interesting because we have made custom dice with Chessex in the past, but what you're talking about is a whole different level. You know, they just have dice where acrylic dice without the pips on the 1 or the 6, and then they engrave it and it's fully functional. But you're talking about a level of detail that, like, do you want square rounded edges? What colors do you want swirled in? you know, custom. I mean, essentially, you're making a custom mold for these dice.
Molds will all be the same, right? It's just your standard 1 through 5 pip or 2 through 6. And then the 6 or the 1 side, you engrave. So you'll actually go through a laser engraver, and then we'll chisel them all out, and then you inlay, and then you polish and QA and pack and all that.
That's awesome. Is there like a set amount you have to get, or how does that work as far as like quantity?
Right. So the minimum quantity is 500 dice, and that'll start at about $425, USD, of course. And that's kind of the minimum, right? And then, of course, it scales and gets cheaper the more you go, which is a little bit of dice, right? It's a little mini mountain of dice. But most teams, most stores, most of folks that we've talked to kind of feel that that's a good number to start with.
Well, we have an award that we sponsor at many Kings of War events. It's called the Countercharger Award.
Okay.
And to win this award, it's the statistically hardest award to win at a wargaming event, because you must finish exactly in the middle of the pack because you are completely average. So it is an award that we sponsor. And in the past, we've done all different types of awards. But the last run we did is like special countercharge dice to give you that only these dice are so special. They roll exactly mediocre, so they must go to the mediocre player. So I know people are always waiting for the countercharge custom dice, so we're gonna have to get with you and maybe get some countercharge dice going.
Heck yeah, I'd be excited for that.
Probably would be a good time for us to plug that you did make a countercharge discount code for listeners. Huge thanks to Steve. They did give us a code for the listeners, 5% off their dice. And the code is countercharge. Go get yourself some Kings of War dice or whatever else. Blood Bowl, Star Wars Legion.
Oh, it's all there.
I play Middle Earth, play the Army of the Dead. Great.
I have to give you a shout out. My buddy, he got the matte dice with the little pipe for his halfling army for the Kings of War.
Yep.
The halfling pipe. And dude, we love those dice at the Loose Caboose, which is the name of the store we're playing at. Everyone is like, he's like, those are matte finish. And I was like, oh, wow, these are, because usually dice, you never see matte dice ever.
Right.
That was like, you talk about having that variety and difference. But he wanted to make sure I gave you a shout out. He's in love with those dice, like more than his army. Like his army's not even put together, but his halfling pipe dice are, he's just like, you know, these are the best things since sliced bread. So.
Heck yeah. Tell your buddy thank you.
So if we look on your vision board, we enter the secret cave of Baron of Dice into the home, the Cobra, the Terradrome, Rob?
The Terradrome, yes.
The Terradrome. What's on your vision board as far as what's next? What is there any genres of games or sort of, what are you guys looking at in the future?
I have a lot of things in my head. So I also need to narrow myself down. But I will say the next thing that I would love to enter is twofold, right? One being the RPG landscape, the D&Ders per se. And I think that allows me to be so creative with a dice and a design and just incorporating so many cool elements into a design. I think that that's a huge, so we're slowly growing our kind of D&D collection. And then following that is a card game. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Magic the Gathering.
just a little card game that you'll play.
Yes. So we are going to do some accessories that are compatible with Magic or any card game system at that matter.
Like a life counter, that kind of stuff?
I'm thinking deck boxes.
Awesome.
I want a box that actually holds 100 double sleeve cards with maybe 10 tokens with a cool design, right? I don't want just a pink or purple or blue or green, or I want a design. I want some artwork, right? I want some of our artwork on there. So those are the next two projects that are spinning around in my head.
That's a market space where people are willing to buy a product of value, right?
Yes.
People are willing to buy a high-end $40, $50 deck box if it's really nice, you know? There's a lot of, I know, demand in that space.
Our goal would be a little bit less than that. Our goal is kind of hovering around $35 is my goal, while still being premium, right? I need a magnetic top. The top has to come off. It has to have a felt inside. It has to be that Baron of Dice level, right? It has to be that premium level, while still being affordable, right? Like, I know other companies charge X for their dice, and we charge a little bit more or a little bit less, but you get 25 of them, and you get them in a metal tin. And their handcrafted resin dice. So why don't we take that kind of level of thinking and apply it to whatever we touch, right? Deck boxes being the next thing, or your RPG dice, where they're going to come in a cool metal tin as well. They're going to be handcrafted resin only dice, right? I don't know. That's my level of thinking, you know?
Well, I think it's good to identify with anything like what your vision, mission, values are, and then carry that through, whether you're expanding or whatever. It's like, you know, I've always felt in your products of they are of a certain quality and just slickness, you know, and it seems like that seems to be like part of the DNA of what you're hoping to accomplish as you expand into these other areas.
You nailed it. Exactly what we're trying to do.
Where did the name come from? Baron of Dice.
So Philippe and William are my crew, right? My OG crew. And I started making dice, and William doesn't remember it, but I was on a phone call with William heading to William's house. And he was like, you're going to become like the Duke of Dice. And I was like, ah, it feels so cliche. And he was like, you're going to be the Baron of Dice. And I was like, yes, yes, we will become the Baron of Dice. A little bit of research into that would have led to me seeing that Baron is here. Duke, Count, Viscount, King, Queen, Princess, right? I'm at the bottom. But I think that also resonates with the players.
But you're still on the ladder.
Right, I'm still on the ladder, right? I'm right above those peasants.
It's like the hardest working nobility, right? You're still noble. You're not a peasant, but right. You still like, you know, kill your own guys. You don't have soul. You're still doing a little killing yourself. Right.
Still getting my hands dirty. Right.
You're still getting them dirty. Take us a little bit through where can people find you in the interwebs.
Our tag is just Baron of Dice, B-A-R-O-N of Dice. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We just established a TikTok, so that'll be fun for, you know, someone my age to discover. Really anywhere. Check out our website, right? baronofdice.com. We hope to see you guys.
Yeah, I would love to see like how the dice are made. Like making resin dice, like I've always just thought of them as like acrylic. So just that process, I know as like a modeler and gamer, I would love to see just some videos on like how you guys make your dice. So that's okay. My plug. TikTok video content.
He's a YouTube channel.
Rob, I've used their dice a bunch and I've never like been like, oh, these are resin.
Until he told us, I just thought they were cool dice.
I never really thought of the actual process of making them being different too.
If you pick up one of our dice and you pick up pretty much any other dice out there, especially a D6, you'll feel a difference. And the reason for that is the material. Our acrylic dice are made by superheating pellets of plastic and forcing them into a metal mold. Here's your resin cups. And resin dice are liquid resin, right? And then you add dye to your cups. You stir them with your stirrers. And you have to hand mix the dye to achieve the color you want. And then you pour them into a silicone mold. And you can pour one, and then you can pour the second color. You can pour both colors at the same time. You can layer the colors. You can add one color, then another color, and then you can swirl it after that. There's so many ways to do
it. Wow, that's cool.
That result in just completely different dice, and you would never think it. But anyway, that's how resin. So resin goes in a silicone mold, then it's pressurized and debubbled, and that kind of just eliminates a whole nother aspect of dice and micro bubbles and balancing issues and things like that. No mold lines, right? All that's polished off. But that's a whole nother deep dive.
Good thing you're really good at quality control.
Yes. Yeah. That's kind of also like, A, they have to be balanced, all of our dice, number one. Two, they have to be readable, like from a distance. And then three, I want every dice to be perfect. And while I know they can't all be perfect, I'm going to get darn close to all being perfect. That's kind of how I live my life.
And we just had an interesting conversation on our show around in our community around like etiquette. You know, there's so much dice etiquette, right? In wargaming, right. You know, and one of the things that sort of bubbled to the surface was something you've brought up today, which is the readability of dice, of how important that is to have dice that you love, but have dice that you roll that your opponent can understand. Like, you know, it's not some crazy, it's like, what, you don't even, it's like hieroglyphics. You don't even know what it's rolling, or the color combination is so not right.
Right.
So that's cool. That's going into your mind as a designer is it going to be readable?
Right. As a player, that's important to me. And it's important to whoever I'm playing. That's kind of what led me to even dabble in dice making, is I wanted dice to match my skeleton army, and the only option was skeleton bones as a one. And I'm like, two bones were like, it was just funky, and I didn't like it. I wanted something clearer and easier to read. That's how I got started, right? That's right from the top.
That's awesome, though. We all like that. All have custom. Right. You know, having custom dice to match your army is like, you went from 0 to 11 at that point, and you're just yep, I'm all in at that point. So,
is Baron of Dice, is it still like, is it your day job yet? Is it still your, do you hope one day for it to be your main thing? Or where is it in the sort of the book of your life right now?
Yeah, that's my goal. Is I think the next step is to just solely be Baron of Dice. That's kind of my shtick. I still do have my full-time job. It's close. It's close. I can feel it.
That's awesome.
I just love, like I said, if you need dice for anything, go check out Baron of Dice. He's got collections in all the different genres, all the different, like, I would be shocked if someone looked through your catalog and couldn't find a dice. You know, having played a little bit of Conquest, Rob, I do like that you can get dice with the symbol on the one, because that game, it's reversed.
Yes.
You want to roll low. Rolling high is horrible. So I have my custom Kings of War dice, and I was playing the other day, and I roll, and all my symbols show, and it's like, oh, you just sucked. So I'm just like, because I did see you did some stuff with Parabellum for Conquest dice, right, where the symbol's on the one.
Yeah, Parabellum's another officially licensed product. They're good to work with. Good people. They have an extensive model range, and they're expanding. They seem to be expanding rapidly with all the new releases.
So for retail spaces, can they carry your dice? Are you through any distributors, or does a retail store just contact you directly? Or how are you looking to maybe get involved in some retail spaces?
Definitely. We're certainly looking to expand and kind of become more reachable. So every game store you've ever been in has Chessex dice. Why don't we do the same, right? Why don't we sit alongside them and kind of give the players more options? So we're certainly looking to expand. And then a retailer or a store would just reach out to me. Just shoot us an email, send us a message. Either one is going to end up in my inbox. And then we'll set it up from there.
It's easy to bring up a good point. There's no reason why there only has to be Chessex dice.
Yeah.
Our Coppolo sometimes you'll find, but you know, it's a place where you think we need some good competition in that space.
Yeah, I think I dove into a kind of monopoly with just another alternative, right? I don't want to be the only dice in a store. I would love other dice to be there, right? Let's just give players more options, right? It's a huge space. There's plenty of options. Let's just give them more options, and then they can choose.
Well, thanks so much, Steve. We really appreciate you coming on the show. Make sure, guys, use that discount code countercharge. Go on there. Let the people speak. Let's get him sold out of Kings of War dice. And let's just get those dice going. You know, really take a look at the Baron of Dice website. So many great options. You know, and thanks a bunch, Steve, for coming on. We really appreciate it. And remember to always keep counter charging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by commenting on the Countercharge Kings of War podcast Facebook group. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.